It's coming through a hole in the air from those nights in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the wars against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA. It's coming through a crack in the wall, on a visionary flood of alcohol, from the staggering account of the Sermon on the Mount, which I don't pretend to understand at all. It's coming from the silence on the dock of the bay, from the brave, the bold, the battered heart of Chevrolet. Democracy is coming to the USA. It's coming from the sorrow in the street, the holy places where the races meet, from the homicidal bitchin' that goes down in every kitchen to determine who will serve and who will eat, from the wells of disappointment where the women kneel to pray for the grace of God in the desert here and the desert far away. Democracy is coming to the USA. Sail on, sail on, sail on, O mighty ship of state, to the shores of need, past the reefs of greed, through the squalls of hate. Sail on, sail on, sail on, sail on. It's coming to America first, the cradle of the best and of the worst. It's here they got the range and the machinery for change, and it's here they got the spiritual thirst. It's here the family's broken, and it's here the lonely say that the heart has got to open in a fundamental way. Democracy is coming to the USA. It's coming from the women and the men. Oh, baby, we'll be making love again. We'll be going down so deep, the river's going to weep, and the mountain's going to shout, amen. It's coming like the tidal flood beneath the lunar sway, imperial, mysterious, and amorous array. Democracy is coming to the USA. Sail on, sail on, O mighty ship of state, to the shores of need, past the reefs of greed, through the squalls of hate. Sail on, sail on, sail on, sail on. I'm sentimental, if you know what I mean. I love the country, but I can't stand the scene. And I'm neither left or right, I'm just staying home tonight, getting lost in that hopeless little screen. But I'm stubborn as those garbage bags that time cannot decay. I'm junk, but I'm still holding up this little wild bouquet. Democracy is coming to the USA. I'm Chuck Gregory. This is the New American Dream Radio Show, and we are streaming live on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. It's listener-supported radio, so be sure to head on over to freedomslips.com or revolution.radio. Show them some support. Show them some love. Find that donation button and use it. Before I introduce my co-host, I just want to make a shout out to my wife, Lorraine, and her mom, Rose, who hopefully are listening to this show out in Houston. Lorraine has gone out there for a few days to visit her mom and her brother, and I'm wishing them all the best. And I'm surviving here on my own, but I miss you already, honey. And now, I'd like to introduce my friend and co-host, Mike Palachuk, an American writer.
Hello, Chuck, and hello, Lorraine. Tonight we welcome these special guests, Philip Ferrugio, Frank Cordero, Larry Pinkney, Anthony Rayson, and M.K. Davis. And so this Thursday evening we're gathering for the New American Dream radio show in Fort Lauderdale, in Port Orange, in Des Moines, Iowa, in northern Minnesota, in Chicago, Illinois, in Minneapolis, Minnesota, in Benton, Mississippi, and wherever you are. My recommended list for tonight, Tina Foster's webpage, Plastic Macca, M-A-C-C-A. Tina will soon be releasing a new book detailing the facts of the case of the death of Paul McCartney in 1966 and his replacement. Plastic Macca is plastic, macca.blogspot.com. Also recommended, Information Clearinghouse. Also recommended, Common Dreams and Democracy Now! On Democracy Now!, all sorts of important issues addressed every day, such as job strike. Barbara Ehrenreich calls on TSA workers to walk off job in protest of government shutdown. And we might add, never come back. It's all a big joke, all based on the 9/11 false narrative. The phony hijackers, the murder of millions. Go away, don't come back. Go away mad if you like, just don't come back. And at Common Dreams, tax the rich, fight the climate crisis. America has its gun sights on Venezuela. Also, what about open borders? The construction of more walls will only worsen existing human rights catastrophe. All this and much more at Democracy Now! And Common Dreams. And of course, we always have to continue to point out that these two outstanding websites will have nothing to do with reporting the truth about 9/11, Boston, Sandy Hook, Oklahoma City, etc., etc. And just as with Jon Stewart and Comedy Central, we have to ask, is this because they have studied the evidence, rolled it around in their hands, and found it wanting? Or is it because they are so, so afraid? Because we have come to understand that since 1963 and even before, we have lived in a state, a nation, or a republic ruled by deception, we understand. We understand that any newspaper publisher, magazine editor, radio show host, TV news show host who persists and still telling us that Osama bin Laden was buried at sea, who still tells us that the plane in Shanksville disappeared into that little hole in the ground, who still tells us that Lee Harvey Oswald killed John Kennedy, that James Earl Ray killed Martin King, that Robert Kennedy was murdered by Sirhan Sirhan, well, they deserve nothing but, they have earned nothing but our convulsive, doubled over laughter. Find an alternative in Penn Magazine, P-E-N-N, magazine.us.
Our first guest of the evening is Philip Ferrugio. Phil joins us each week from Port Orange, Florida. You can find Phil all over the internet, many great websites. I'm not even going to try to list them right now. But he's published all over the internet, and he's a great writer. And here he is with his segment for tonight. It's the Empire, stupid.
Good evening, working stiffs. Down with dictators. Okay, this writer just loves it when our USA mainstream embedded in empire media. And, of course, our two-party, one-party politicians rant and rave about dictators. They lash out at the preposterous comical assertions by the leaders of many countries who seem to win re-elections with 90 to 100% of the vote. And then these leaders say that these nations are democracies. Well, shame on them. And shame on our nation's corporate and political entities who keep trading and financially aiding those countries with those dictators. These men, and not too often women, who are quite honestly dictators, always make sure that there is little or no opposition to them. What cracks this writer up is when so-called socialist Bernie Sanders said, quote, Hugo Chavez is just a dead communist dictator. Yet, Chavez won election and two re-elections as Venezuela's president against formidable candidates, the last time being in 2012 when he won by 55 to 45% of the vote. Is that what our empire lemmings would call a dictatorship? Well, here's the skinny on our so-called democracy and free elections in America with a K. The fat cats who are the wizards behind the odds sure are shrewd. For close to a century, they have made sure that their concoction, a.k.a. two-party system, stayed intact. Folks, anyone else just could not get through the door. The powerful money behind both of the empire's parties just keeps on splashing out of the spigot. Any semblance of a third-party movement is squashed before it can get legs. Or one of the two parties, usually today's Democrats, just co-opts the new movement and places it under its, quote, big tent. Finally, most elections, for president especially, sees a majority of the voting public, which is usually around 50% of eligible voters. Why is that? They don't even vote for one candidate, but in reality, they're voting against the other. Trump, to this writer's way of thinking and logic, won because the powerful backlash against Hillary Clinton. My joke has been that if the Democrats had run Donald Duck against Donald Trump, they would have won. So bottom line is that we do have dictatorship right here in good old America with a K. It is much more sophisticated than the whereupon the suckers who actually do the voting get to choose from, as Ralph Nader labeled it, Twiddledum and Twiddledee. The two-party, one-party con job will differ on certain issues like abortion, gay rights, Medicaid funding. Gee, I'm having difficulty finding a lot more of the key issues, but never on what really matters to our survival as a republic, that being the obscene military spending, overseas wars and occupations, big banks controlling everything, American corporations running roughshod on workers at home and abroad, and the piece de resistance, the notion that this corporate capitalist, quote, free enterprise system really works for all. Mr. Trump may think of himself as a semi-dictator, but he is not. The powerful forces who even allowed someone with his closet filled with skeletons to achieve our highest office, they call the shots. The last time someone stood up to them or thought he surely had the will of the masses behind him wound up in a triangular crossfire in Dallas, Texas. Thank you.
And now we join In Progress, another episode of The Americans. The Americans is sponsored this week by Operation Northwoods Deodorant. It hangs in the air long after you're gone. The Americans is also sponsored this week by Gravitas Cologne. If you are what you are, then you ain't what you ain't. Get some Gravitas Cologne today and at least smell like you mean business. Also sponsored by the National Intelligence Agency, Combating Stupidity. Also by Go Your Own Way, Compasses for Republicans, as well as I Think We're Alone Now, Personal Computers for Americans. The Americans is also brought to us by Razor Wire Dental Floss. It's good for you, really. Crisis Actors of the Homeland, Operation Mockingbird, Operation Northwoods, COINTELPRO, and by Kraft and Blackwater. Bringing you Aurora, Tucson, Orlando, the Boston Bombing, Sandy Hook, San Bernardino, and so much more. The Americans dream of marshmallow clouds and lollipop lanes and TV towns while the world wails, fists clenched, tears streaming. The Americans dream of rocket ships, fireworks, freedom, and hallelujah while they sleep on through the alarm, the house of fire. It's true that the newcomers to Washington, D.C. are different than ever before, but after all is said and done, they are Americans. The construction is underway for the wall around the Washington, D.C. Beltway to drain the swamp with an impressive culvert system and to separate the White House, the FBI, the CIA, the Pentagon, the Congress, and the Washington Press Corps from normal human beings. Scattered around the job site are the wooden boards to be tacked up all around the new wall with the message. Let me put it this way. While 9/11 was a U.S. deep state operation, probably subcontracted for execution to the Israelis, the entire Washington swamp has been, since 9/11, accomplice after the fact by helping to maintain the cover-up. If this is brought into light, then thousands of political careers are going to crash and burn into the scandal. And now, the Americans. We rejoin our reality show, already in progress. Chuck?
Hey, just a second here. And in the parallelogram office, we find President Cosmo Nutt at his big desk, working hard on his big, clean, yellow legal pad, drawing pictures of dollar signs, boobs, and tanks, while watching Sesame Street on the big screen TV in the parallelogram office, where John F. Kennedy Jr., John, dressed as the letter Q, is reading Big Bird and Snuffle, Elmo, and Oscar a bedtime story. No border crisis exists, no justification for partially shutting down government. What's going on is a bipartisan political standoff unrelated to national security. Trump, the GOP, and the undemocratic Dems share blame. There's plenty of it to go around in Washington, mostly on issues far more important than to build or not to build a border wall, fence, barrier, call it what you will, along the U.S.-Mexico border, accomplishing nothing other than wasting billions of dollars if built. The saying about when elephants fight, the grass gets trampled is relevant to the fallout from what's going on in its 27th day with no signs of resolution. Hundreds of thousands of government workers with no dog in this fight are going unpaid. Around 40 million poor Americans dependent on Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, to feed their families, are cut off from receiving food stamps they vitally need. If the shutdown continues endlessly for weeks longer, they could be cut off entirely. Perhaps a motive behind preventing resolution. Social justice in America eroded markedly since the neoliberal 90s. Begun by the Clinton co-presidency, continued by Bush, Cheney, Obama, and Trump. Border crossings by undocumented aliens are way down historically. People coming are largely desperate Central American families with children, fleeing state-sponsored and gang-related violence, repression, and deep poverty. For lack of jobs and the absence of even modest social justice in Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador, and elsewhere, Central Americans and others are coming to survive, fleeing intolerable conditions in their home countries, U.S.-supported despotic regimes running them. What's going on and much more shows Americans are ill-governed and ill-served by the vast majority of policymakers in Washington, uncaring about their fundamental rights and welfare. That's the deplorable state of the nation today. Things worsening over time, worse than ever under Trump, the GOP, and undemocratic Dems. They're not gun or knife-toting terrorists or criminals. They're desperate people seeking safe haven, needing help, not arrested detention, not a border wall, not a political issue. Nothing else. Homeland security, including immigration and customs enforcement, funding, their funding should be sharply cut, not increased. Involved in waging war on unwanted aliens of the wrong race, ethnicity, and or religion, part of the U.S. bipartisan-supported white supremacist governance, well, poor desperate arrivals aren't wanted. People of color scorned. Muslims from the wrong countries, vilified. Unwanted aliens are dehumanized, hunted down and mistreated. ICE tactics are Gestapo-like. Neighborhoods, workplaces, and other locations are raided, along with repression along America's southern border and brutalizing detentions. ICE agents operate extrajudicially, making random arrests and detentions, conducting unlawful searches and seizures. What's going on occurs nationwide, not just along the U.S.-Mexico border. Excessive force is commonplace. Constitutional protections violated.
Coming up in our next half hour, we'll hear from Frank Cordero in Des Moines and Anthony Racin in Chicago. After that, we'll hear from Larry Pinkney in Minneapolis and M.K. Davis in Benton, Mississippi. Please stay tuned to Revolution Radio, the listener-sponsored alternative to the lies presented daily elsewhere.
Find some comfort at Willow's World, a variety of news, commentary and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
Travels to Earth through the rainbow crystal bubbles from the furthest reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday on Studio B at Revolution Radio.
Do you or someone you know suffer from poor circulation, shortness of breath, or chest pains? Are you looking for a more natural solution to help overcome these problems? People tell us that after just a few months taking Extendivite, their doctors have noticed unexplainable improvements in their overall health. For more information, visit heartdrop.com or call 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
And tell them Nighthawk sent you, because if you call this number and tell them Nighthawk sent you, you'll get $5 off your first order at extendivite.com. Thank you.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
This message brought to you by the Foundation for a New American Dream. Did we go to the moon? Maybe, maybe not. But just like Voldemort and so many discussions that are prohibited in America, it is one that cannot be named. Was 9/11 an inside job? Stop. See, like that, you can't talk about that. Was Paul Wellstone assassinated? A roll of the eyes. You were sent to Siberia by your brother, your mother, and your cousin. disapparated from the Thanksgiving dinner table. Poof. No one can see you or talk to you. You are a non-person. Might as well go smoke in the garage. Did FDR provoke Pearl Harbor in order to get into WW2? Did the government burn men, women, and children alive at Waco? Was the government involved in the Oklahoma City bombing? Are so-called terror plots and mass murders, such as in Aurora, Colorado, Newtown, and dozens of other terrorist events, actually engineered by the FBI and CIA, NSA, in order to bring about a zeitgeist of fear and scare Americans into accepting a police state? What are chemtrails? What does the government know about UFOs? Why does Sirhan not remember anything about the Robert F. Kennedy shooting? Who shot Martin Luther King? James Earl Ray said he didn't do it. Evidence says the FBI and others did it. Do those questions have merit, or are they preposterous? We will never know, because Brian Williams and NBC and A.B. Goodman and NPR are afraid of even the questions. Why? Did Bush steal the elections of 2000 and 2004? Ask these questions on any mainstream or so-called liberal website or TV show or newspaper or radio show, and you will get laughed down. Ask it on the so-called liberal progressive Stephen Colbert or Jon Stewart. They will try to humiliate you. Why? Is it because you are truly so hilariously pathetic? Or is it because they are so afraid? The foundation for a new American dream, because it's time to wake up. Your toast is ready. The bus is here. The world is on fire. Our next guest is Frank Cordero. Frank Cordero, as always, joins us from the Des Moines Catholic Worker in Des Moines, Iowa. And we're going to hear right now a conversation between Chuck Gregory and Frank Cordero.
Yo, Chuck.
Well, hello, Frank.
How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, I went to court today for my trespass charge.
Oh.
From December 28th, and it's one of those charges that they can't send you to jail. It's a couple years ago last year they changed the misdemeanor trespass charge in our state from a possible 30-day sentence to a no jail time scene. Oh. So. Even though I've in recent history been arrested 6-7 times out there in the last 2.5 years, on this new charge, this is only my second time. So, and it's a non-jail scene. So I just went in, pled guilty, and got the $500 fine, and just walked out. That's basically what it is. I know this won't stand. We need to do much more than we currently are, and I know that the system will react. One of the things I remember early in the campaign at Offutt, it took them a couple years before they started really putting people in jail for doing line crossings and stuff. We became such a nuisance. But as soon as they put you in jail for 6 months, it pretty much then thinned the ranks of people who would take such risk. At least that's what happened in Omaha. We'll see what happens here. I'm determined to make this scene, our drone command center, my focus for resistance, even if it's just a pathetic cross the line 2-3 times a year. So I just got back. So I'm all fluttered with just being in a cut courtroom. Although there is no drama in a traffic court scene, and yeah, and the judge is really a nice woman. It's the feminization of our court system has some pluses, but the underlying subtext is this. It's at that level, it's just a collection agency against the poor. Yeah. It's clear as a day. It's a rigged system, no matter how nice the judges are and the people are. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we muddle through, and I'm just now trying to get a press release out and let people know I got fined and a pretty perfunctory type thing. We go on to the next thing. For us, it's going to be in March. We're going to do a repeat. We did this in 2014, invited the Midwest Catholic workers to come and help us expose the drone command center that has yet to go online. We were protesting its anticipated arrival. Now we're 2-3 years into its existence, and we're returning with the Midwest Catholic workers on the same weekend, the Feast of St. Patrick, the Irish patron. St. Patrick was a pacifist, a military guy turned pacifist. We're going to try to bring some of the real spirit of Patrick into Des Moines and do a witness out there. We got Kathy Kelly, speaking of Irish folks. Oh. Kathy Kelly, the nearest thing we have in our communities, Catholic workers all over the country, to our, God, what can we say about Kathy? She's just like an international Mother Teresa for peace and justice stuff. The woman always putting herself in jeopardy in the Middle East, in the many countries we have been at war with, to just try to bridge the gap. I'm sure many of the people who are listening know who I'm talking about, Kathy Kelly and the voices in the wilderness. Great stuff. And then we'll get some other folks here. We're looking for some Vets for Peace to join us too. So it should be an interesting week, but it's the next few months, we're going to try to outlive winter. So far, not so bad. But crazy weather can do lots of things, even in Florida, I'm sure. Oh, yeah. That's kind of what's going on. I didn't have to work today on shift because there's always a chance you may go to jail. I never put yourself in front of a judge. I'm apt to say something to get myself thrown in jail. So they gave me the day off, and I'm just taking it easy.
Well, I'm glad you're not in jail. And hey, keep on making noise and making things happen.
Thank you. I'll hook up with you again next week when my mind's a little more clearer.
Sounds good, Frank. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, brother. Bye. Bye-bye.
And in the night, one family camps in a ditch and another family pulls in and the tents come out. The two men squat on their hams and the women and children listen. Here is the node, you who hate change and fear revolution. Keep these two squatting men apart. Make them hate, fear, suspect each other. Here is the analog of the thing you fear. This is the zygote. For here, I lost my land is changed. A cell is split, and from its splitting grows the thing you hate. We lost our land. This is the thing to bomb. This is the beginning from I to we. And the great owners who must lose their land in an upheaval, the great owners with access to history, with eyes to read history and to know the great fact, when property accumulates in too few hands, it is taken away. And that companion fact, when a majority of the people are hungry and cold, they will take by force what they need. And the little screaming fact that sounds through all history, repression works only to strengthen and knit the repressed. If you stand for the national anthem, you must be American. If you stand for fighter jets flying over the stadium, you might be an American. If you stand for the bombing of children, you might be an American. If you recite the Pledge of Allegiance to bombing children, you might be an American. If you recite the latest from the TV nightly news as if it were the truth, you might be an American. If you pay for bombs that kill children, you might be an American. If you pay for soldiers who kill children, you might be an American. If you hate immigrants coming into your town, you might be an American. If your great-grandparents were immigrants coming into town, you might be an American. If you put your neighbors in cages because they are too poor to live without stealing because you have taken far more than your share, you might be an American. If you can walk around Walmart with your eyes open for more than 7 minutes and still believe you and your neighbors are the hope of the world, you might be an American. Our next show is Anthony Rason. Anthony Rason joins us each month from Chicago. Anthony is a publisher. He publishes zines. He publishes the writings of prisoners. He talks to prisoners. He's met them over the years and years, and they send him their writing, and he publishes them in the zines and sends these zines back into the prisons and out into general population out here. And now we're going to attempt to contact Anthony Rason in Chicago.
Hello.
Well, hello, Anthony. It's Chuck and Mike, the New American Dream Radio Show, and you are on the air.
Well, very good. Thanks a lot, folks. Last spring, this lady from Chicago Magazine came down to interview me, and I kind of didn't think it would be published, but lo and behold, it came out the last day of the year. It was called Why Anthony Rason, Anarchist Grandpa, Sends Zines to Prisons. So you can find the article, Google Anarchist Grandpa. So that was cool. So it got me looking at some of my older work, and so I'm going to read a piece I wrote in 1999, sort of a personal piece called Off to Florida. My wife told me my dad called and left a message. Then he called me at work. He told me his melanoma has returned. They can't operate yet until they do a bunch of tests on his heart. The cancer is on his foot. He's also got Alzheimer's. Damn, he said he was in limbo waiting to see. I could feel he was scared. He's old, 77. He said, I need you down here. I felt the pain and the need big time. I told him that I'll come down real soon. He and my mom live in Port St. Lucie, Florida, on the Atlantic coast, about 150 miles north of Miami. I knew I had to go. I'd have to blow off work in a few meetings I was going to go on to make presentations for. I was going to report to News and Letters, the Marxist Humanists, on my prisoner support work. The hardcore punk band UHP out of Blue Island was going to come over to my house to check me out and load up on zines. I'd been talking to the bass player, Mike, on the phone a few times during the previous week. They want to get involved with ARA and do some projects together. I got their 7-inch record from their old band, Crippled Heroes, called Cycle of Oppression, from Jason and Dan from Subvert. They're very good in narco-punk. Jason and Dan were also supposed to come over to work on this zine. It was going to be a split zine with their zine called Time Bomb. They're in a band called Dead Scene. I was going to do 40 pages, and they were going to get 20. I haven't been able to contact them lately. Maybe they're out of town or something. Anyway, I came home from work, resolved to go to Florida by myself, maybe, but go nonetheless, and soon. Leslie knew I would be going. I said I wanted us all to go. That settled it. She was with me, super supportive. We'd all go. She just lost her mom in December and her dad 23 months earlier. We didn't want to go down there for a funeral or to see him all doped up, disabled and in pain. We wanted to enjoy his company while he was still okay and hadn't gone under the knife yet. We had to hurry. It was Friday night. We'd leave at the crack of dawn Saturday. We had to pack and make arrangements. We called Stanton School, the neighbors, our jobs, babysitter, etc. I called my buddy George to have him pick up my mail. I get a lot of mail, and you have to get it out of the box every couple of days or it gets too full. He's one of my partners with Stan. Lately, we've been giving a lot of interviews to local and Chicago papers, providing them with with their best quotes on the airport fight. We've been having several letters published also. We're gearing up for another spring struggle against the state. This year, they want to actually start buying land. So we packed our stuff. I got up at 3:45 a.m. and finished everything and packed the car. We left at about 6:30 and drove all day and night and made it to Marietta, Georgia, just north of Atlanta. Got a motel, had dinner, and crashed. Stanton flicked on the set, so we laughed at Mr. Bean. He was in an indoor pool being an idiot. A kid smashed his hand on the high dive, dropping him into the water. He lost his trunks and grossed out a bunch of schoolgirls. Bean's funny. We got up and left early again. During the continental breakfast, Stevens spilled orange juice all over one of their fancy chairs. The weather reports were very ominous for Florida. It seemed like we were to be driving into a hurricane or something. Right now it's about noon, and we're just crossing into Florida. We'll be there by tonight, half a day earlier than we said. I'd like to look up my connections. The folks at Awaken Industries in Titusville, Karen Hoffman imprisoned at Tallahassee TCI, and Jay Free Frank in Gainesville. I don't know if I can do that. We don't have much time. We must be back by Sunday night. I brought a bunch of papers to work on. Growing old and suffering, then dying is so damn unfair. You struggle all your life to get it together, acquiring knowledge, experience, and wisdom, and your damn body gives out. He'll get to see his youngest grandchild and vice versa. They're lucky. They have 15 of them. They range in age from 21 to 4. There's a couple of other grandsons between the ages of 4 and 10, our son's ages, but Stephen is still and always will be the baby of the family. It's going to be great. Maybe he can play a few holes of golf or slap a tennis ball around. He's funny when he plays golf. He's got these grubby old man pants. He wears his food weighted down with golf balls. If he doesn't like his shot, he just drops another one like a turtle laying eggs. He doesn't even look up. Mom will be happy too. I'm the only one of their kids that hasn't made it down to see them yet. We wanted to be close to Leslie's folks as they slowly lost their grip on life. The boys are loving it. We had twin beds at the motel. I spent a good half hour last night jumping from one bed to the other and back again and tussling. That's one of our big deals, tussling. They are spirited free-for-alls that I'm considered fair game for. They can punch, pinch, hit, kick, elbow, and jump on and generally abuse me with impunity. The dreams of children involve raucous contact, adventure, and much laughter. We arrived without stopping at a store. Good thing, my folks were just leaving their house to go to dinner and a movie. They weren't expecting us, and my calls never got through. We would have been hanging around for hours had we arrived just 5 minutes later. So we all went to dinner together. We stayed on a pull-out couch, which destroyed my back after a couple nights, and the boys slept on a mattress on the floor. They loved it. It was like camping to them. The next day, we went on a river ride along the Port St. Lucie River. It was unusually still pretty pristine, very few buildings and a lot of flora and fauna. We saw a lot of birds, turtles, and even alligators. It was pleasant. We spent a lot of time just hanging around, talking and being with him. My dad got his test scheduled and a date for his surgery in April, so he was much relieved. After a couple, 3 days, we drove down to stay with my older brothers, who each have houses and families in Florida also. Bill, Gita, and Miguel live in Pembroke Pines. Nessa is in the Air Force. Matter of fact, she's in Saudi Arabia as part of the murderous U.S. military. We stayed the night. Gita made a wonderful Portuguese dinner. She's from Portugal. Bill and I went and played tennis with his team. It was fun. They played on clay courts. He kicked my ass, and then we teamed up and beat two doubles teams. He plays regularly. I don't. The next day, we went to the beach in Hollywood and on a nature walk. We went to the Port St. Lucie beach every day we were there, too. It was a lot of fun. I got sunburned from my knees down because I was too stupid to put on the lotion all the way down. We gathered hundreds of seashells and got washed around in the big waves. I took a video camera and recorded the whole vacation. Then we went to go see John, Kathy, Brad, Bob, and Chloe. Jesse is in college. They got a fancy place with two boats. John's a state representative. He's got a damn yacht and even a place in Key West. Ho-hum. His daughter Chloe is a riot girl working on a zine. That was cool. We stopped back at my folks, had breakfast, and were gone. We drove and made it to the Fleabag Motel in Macon, Georgia. Man, we switched rooms and slept somewhat fitfully. Around Chattanooga, we stopped at the tourist spot Lookout Mountain, but we didn't pay for a tour. Instead, the boys and I just started climbing up a muddy rock slide with me filming our little adventure. We scared Mom and came back down all proud of ourselves and filthy dirty. The price was certainly right. Free. We drove to Louisville and ended up in a decent motel with an indoor pool, which the kids had a great time playing in. On Sunday, we stopped at the Children's Museum in Indianapolis and stayed several hours. It's huge, much bigger than the one in Chicago. We got home around 7 p.m. We drove 2,900 miles in 9 days. The boys behaved really well, considering they were sardined for long periods. We saw my folks and brothers, and we were home now. So that was a sweet remembrance. Made me think of family. My grandson just turned 6 2 days ago, and actually he's with us tonight. He's sleeping over tonight, so we've been monkeying around all night, and we're going to have him all day again tomorrow. So you know, you balance your activist life with your personal life. And both are super important. You have to interweave them. And you really can't do one without the other, in my opinion. As for the article, I think you folks would find this very interesting. This lady named Phoebe Mogare is an editor and a writer for Chicago Magazine, which is like the Atlantic Monthly of the Midwest. So I didn't think that it would even be printed or published, but it was finally, at least online, the online version. So I'll start a little bit of that. The interesting thing about Phoebe is she went to Grinnell College in the middle of Iowa, and she was part of a prisoner support group that they went to prisons in Iowa, and they even worked with them and got them to get credits, college credits. And so when I talked to her, I said, I went to Grinnell College. I dropped out in 1972 because Nixon and Kissinger had invaded Cambodia illegally again. And all the colleges and universities went out on strike. And Grinnell College only went on strike for one day. And I said, no, I'm staying on strike. And so I did. I stayed on strike. And about a week later, I just took off and ended up hitchhiking around the country for the next 2 years. And I told her, I tried to call that lady that ran your prison program that I could come and do a presentation and whatnot. She never got back to me. But I think that kind of stuck in her craw. Anyway, here's what she writes. Why Anthony Reason, Anarchist Grandpa, sends zines to prison. For years, the self-made publications have been relegated to art circles. But Reason, in collaboration with DePaul, has found a new use for the retro medium. You can usually find Anthony Reason, 64, in the Brightwood sunroom at the rear of his home in South Suburban Moni. Through the window, there's a sandbox of kids' toys for Reason's grandson when he visits. At a small table, he lays out apple slices for guests. The room is stuffed with bookshelves, and the bookshelves are stuffed with folded sheets of white A4 paper, making up thousands of homemade zines. Reason pulls a few titles: Abolish All Prisons, Free the Slaves, and finally, The Most Virtuous Vagina in the United States of America, Grinning. Zines are self-made, low-budget literature, often booklets, were once a staple of underground publishing. But in the internet age, as self-publishing has become quicker, cheaper, and boundless, they've fallen out of favor. These days, zines are mostly relegated to art circles. Reason, though, has found a practical use for the medium. For the past 20 years, he's run the South Chicago ABC Zine Distro, a service that mails copies of zines from his extensive collection to incarcerated people. He also catalogs and sends out zines made from inside prisons, creating a network between prisoners across the country. Reason's work, including multiple collaborations with incarcerated writers, is the inspiration for a current exhibition, Incarceration: Art, Activism, and Advocacy, on display at DePaul's Richardson Library through the first week of January. Reason wrote his first zine, The People's Polar Express, in the 1970s. He just dropped out of his freshman year at Grinnell College in protest of U.S. military action in Cambodia, or rather, in protest of a protest. Grinnell students only struck for one day, says Reason. So I said, no, I'm staying on strike. He hitchhiked around the country for the 2 years, then returned to his parents' home in Tinley Park, where he logged more than 100 pages of creative writing. He's since gone back to school, graduating as valedictorian from Prairie State College in 1995. It wasn't until the 1990s that Reason built the zine library he'd later use as a distribution center. At the time, he was a member of an anti-racist activist group. At one of the regional meetups, he had the idea to organize each chapter's various literature into an anthology. I realized if it was going to happen, I was going to have to be the one to do it, Reason says. All you need to distribute zines is a library of originals. From there, you can scan, fold, and staple copies in minutes. It didn't take Reason long to amass a huge collection, and soon he wanted to share it. He posted ads in other zines and wrote letters to editors of lefty publications like The Progressive and Mother Jones, but they went largely unanswered. It seemed so hopeful in the early 70s, says Race. Everyone was pissed off, you know? We're going to stop this shit. But everyone decided, oh, I'm just going to go disco. Race persisted, and soon he found an unlikely readership in state prisons.
Listen to Revolution
so
Radio.
It goes on and on. I complained about it.
We'll be right back after this message.
I guess you get the gist of it.
Anthony, I've read that article and it is great.
Hey, everyone.
Thank
it's
you,
Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past
story,
lives or future plans, need answers
the
from the cosmos
trip.
About your love life or
and,
career, or
yeah.
just want to keep your finger
Thanks
on the pulse of the planet,
and,
check out my show,
hey, Happy New
The
Year.
Cosmic Oracle, here
Happy
on
New Year
Revolution
to you and everybody
Radio
out there.
At
Take care. Let's go get them.
All right. Bye-bye.
Good night. Bye.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Wadia will remain a dictatorship. Or be quiet. Why are you guys so anti-dictators? Imagine if America was a dictatorship. You could let 1% of the people have all the nation's wealth. You could help your rich friends get richer by cutting their taxes and bailing them out when they gamble and lose. You could ignore the needs of the poor for healthcare and education. Your media would appear free, but would secretly be controlled by one person and his family. You could wiretap phones. You could torture foreign prisoners. You could have rigged elections. You could lie about why you go to war. You could fill your prisons with one particular racial group, and no one would complain. You could use the media to scare the people into supporting policies that are against their interests.
Tune in Monday through Friday, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, for Liberation Nation with Deacon John, where America comes to hear the truth.
I know this is hard for you Americans to imagine, but please try.
Ohio Exopolitics will be on from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A. Mark Schneider will have guests on that will discuss many important topics, including the state of the world today. However, much of the show will be dedicated to the writings of Edward Albert Meyer. Let me read a short passage from one of his writings. Love is the highest principle of creation, and through it, everything exists in absolute logic. All of nature in its indescribable splendor is nothing but the love of creation, which is expressed visibly. The love of creation is everywhere, because without it, nothing at all would be able to exist. Please join Mark on Ohio Exopolitics from 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern on Studio A.
Do you or someone you know suffer from poor circulation, shortness of breath, or chest pains? Are you looking for a more natural solution to help overcome these problems? People tell us that after just a few months taking Extendivite, their doctors have noticed unexplainable improvements in their overall health. For more information, visit heartdrop.com or call 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
And tell them Nighthawk sent you, because if you call this number and tell them Nighthawk sent you, you'll get $5 off your first order at extendivite.com. Thank you.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Our next guest is a lifelong activist from Minneapolis. Larry Pinkney served time in prison for his work as a member of the Black Panther Party in the 1960s. Since then, he's been a writer, a radio show host, and he's always in touch with what is happening in the world, in the country. And now we're going to attempt to contact, in Minneapolis, Larry Pinkney.
Good evening, Larry Pinkney speaking.
Well, hello, Larry. It's Chuck and Mike, the New American Dream Radio Show. You're on the air, and hey, we'd like to wish you a Happy New Year.
I would like to wish both you, Chuck, and Mike, a very Happy New Year. The struggle continues. Aluta al continua. Let me get right off into something immediately this evening on, what is it? It's, Thursday, the 17th of January, 2019. This is going to be somewhat controversial, but I don't care. We got to deal with what we got to deal with. And ask me questions if you want to. I'll be here. But I want to say this. We are in a nation that certain people are trying vigorously to destroy. Okay? While I strongly support human rights of people, I support the human rights of people, which is why I am the only U.S. citizen and Black Panther Party veteran to have ever successfully authored a case to the United Nations. So while I strongly support the human rights of people, we cannot and must not support those who would demand, and I'm talking about, I'm going to be very specific, the so-called LGBTQ folks who demand, I repeat, demand that we condone and support their sexual lifestyle. Their lifestyle is their lifestyle. But don't demand that we condone it. We support their rights. But it's a difference between supporting their rights and condoning their lifestyle. They are what they are. We are what we are. Now, let me move on. Our nation and the entire world is on the brink of nuclear annihilation. I repeat, on the brink of nuclear annihilation, all right? But we are demanded to support their lifestyle. Excuse me, there are some priorities. We must get our priorities straight and understand that pronouns cannot replace the very survival of humanity on this planet as a whole. As a whole, our nation, the United States of America, is in crisis. And yet, we U.S. citizens, you know, I'm going to give an example. We U.S. citizens, we must show our ID, our identification, all right, when we're traveling by air within this nation. But there are those who say that anyone and everyone, including those without ID, must be allowed to illegally enter our nation. Something is wrong with that picture. We show our nation, or rather our ID, our identification, when traveling by air within this nation. But we're told that we must allow anyone and everyone, including those without ID, identification, to be allowed to illegally enter our nation. Something's wrong with that. Common sense, all right? This is frankly, it is the zenith of insanity and hypocrisy. All power to the people. You dig it? This is about national sovereignty of our nation. Very simple. Very simple. Doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure that out. All right, I'm done. So, my brothers, any questions, any comments, any statements?
Well, Larry, that was an interesting, interesting stance. I'm not sure I agree. I certainly appreciate your thoughtful presentation of it, and I certainly support your right to have to that opinion. I'm not convinced on the immigration part, but it was still a very interesting viewpoint.
Well, let me respond to you by saying this. As an American citizen, a U.S. citizen who fled from the United States back in the 70s, all right? I fled because my very life was in jeopardy. My comrades were being killed, murdered, set up, framed, all right? And I fled, and I happened, the nation that I fled to was Sweden, or Sverige in Swedish, all right? And when I got to Sweden, they asked me for my identification, and I showed it to them. Now, they had a choice. They could say, no, we will not allow you to stay and fight, or we will allow you to stay. I showed them my identification. They knew who I was. They knew I wasn't a murderer, a drug dealer, or whatever, all right, that I was a political organizer and activist, and they said, okay, come in. You can stay and fight for your rights here. And I believe, quite frankly, that no one, repeat, no one has the right simply to say, I owe or we owe, this nation owes the right to anyone to go in. I don't think it's about just the United States. I think it's about all nations that have the right to national sovereignty. They have the right to determine who can come in and who cannot come in. And yes, people can, you know, play the violin and tell me about how terrible things are in other countries. But I can play the violin and tell them about how terrible things are here with Black Americans, Puerto Rican Americans, even white Americans, okay? And so I think that we need to get some sanity and some sense in our so-called immigration policies. There's a big difference between demanding that I have the right to just enter your nation. Well, I don't believe that. I'm sorry. And my ancestors didn't come here through Ellis Island. My ancestors, who were both Black and Indigenous Native, all right? But the Black folks of my ancestors did not enter through Ellis Island, all right? My point being simply this, that we need to have a very real, an honorable, and sensible so-called immigration policy. That's all I'm saying, my brother.
All right. Well, I can certainly relate to that, and that makes a lot of sense, Larry. I tend more towards open borders, but that's, you know, we'll have to discuss that another time because we don't really have much more time here.
Right.
But I appreciate your bringing issues to us, even when, or perhaps especially when they're controversial.
Absolutely.
Thanks again for being on our show, Larry. We really do appreciate it. And hey, we'll talk to you next month.
That's why you're special, my brother. All right. Take care. Stay strong. All power to the people. Thank you so very, very much.
Thanks, Larry. Bye-bye.
Good night, Larry.
Bye-bye. Good night.
And now we flip over to the new NBC Nightly News with your host, the ghost of Tom Joad. taking over tonight for somebody we already forgot. We do know that Tom Brokaw, John Chancellor, David Brinkley, Frank McGee, and Dan Rather are over there. But do you really care? Take it away, Tom. Cue the sun. Dan Berrigan's meditation on the action of the Catonsville Nine. On May 17, 1968, nine people, including Father Daniel Berrigan and his brother, Father Philip Berrigan, entered a draft board and removed draft files of those who were about to be sent to Vietnam. They took these files outside and burned them with homemade napalm, a weapon commonly used on civilians by the U.S. forces. They then awaited their arrest by authorities. The following is the statement Dan Berrigan read in court during their trial. Some 10 or 12 of us will, if all goes well, take our bodies during this week to a draft center in or near Baltimore. There we shall, of purpose and forethought, remove the 1A files, sprinkle them in the public street with homemade napalm, and set them afire. For which act we shall beyond doubt be placed behind bars for some portion of our natural lives in consequence of our inability to live and content in the plagued city to say peace, peace, when there is no peace, to keep the poor, poor, the thirsty, thirsty, and hungry, hungry. Our apologies, good friends, for the fracture of good order, the burning of paper instead of children, the angering of the orderlies in the front parlor of the Charnel House. We could not, so help us God, do otherwise. For we are sick at heart, our hearts give us no rest for thinking of the land of burning children and for thinking of that other child of whom the poet Luke speaks. The infant was taken up in the arms of an old man whose tongue grew resonant and emphatic at the touch of that beauty. And the old man spoke, "This child is set for the fall and rise of many in Israel, a sign that is spoken against. Small consolation, a child born to make trouble and to die for it, the first Jew, to be subject of a definitive solution." And so we stretch out our hands to our brothers throughout the world, we who are priests to our fellow priests, all of those who act against the law, turn to the poor of the world, to the Vietnamese, to the victims, to the soldiers who kill and die for the wrong reasons, for no reason at all, because they were so ordered by the authorities of that public order, which is in effect a massive institutionalized disorder. We say killing is disorder. Life and gentleness and community and unselfishness is the only order we recognize. For the sake of that order, we risk our liberty, our good name. The time has passed when good men may be silent, when obedience can segregate men from public risk, when the poor can die without defense. How many indeed must die before our voices are heard? How many must be tortured, dislocated, starved, maddened? How long must the world's resources be raped in the service of legalized murder? When, at what point, will you say no to this war? We have chosen to say, with the gift of our liberty, if necessary, our lives. The violence stops here. The death stops here. The suppression of the truth stops here. This war stops here. This has been the ghost of Tom Joad, the new host of the NBC Nightly News. And that's the way it is. Our next guest of the show is M.K. Davis. M.K. Davis joins us each month from Benton, Mississippi. He oftentimes chooses to speak about the Bigfoot phenomena. And we're going to see what M.K. is going to talk about tonight. So, M.K. Davis from Benton, Mississippi.
Hello.
Well, hello, M.K. It's Chuck and Mike, the New American Dream Radio Show, and you are on the air, and we would like to wish you a Happy New Year.
Well, thank you very much. It's certainly a lot happier than it was last month. I had a pretty rough time of it. I'm still a little under the weather. I had a really bad infection, and I think that if I had been a few more hours getting treated, it might have been beyond redemption. But nevertheless, thanks to the miracle of modern medicine and modern medical chemicals, I'm here. And I'm thinking about I went to my blog site today. It's called Davis Report, and you can find it at thedavisreport.wordpress.com. And I'm on my dashboard right now, in under media, and I'm looking at kind of a hodgepodge of everything that I've worked on over the past few years is stored, and I didn't realize that I had done this much work. A good portion of it is on the Patterson Bigfoot film, but some of it's not. Some of it, I restored a film of Ishii, the last truly wild native person to come out of the woods and give himself up, the last of his tribe. And they had a canister, they stored this film in a canister of Ishii demonstrating, shooting a bow, and the canister caught on fire on its own, spontaneous combustion through chemicals. And there were only a few frames. So this method that I had put together to try to help the Patterson film be less flicker and more smoothness, because it was taken at such slow shutter speed, I was able to employ that method with the Ishii footage. With those few frames, I was able to fill them in, and it dramatically improved it. And so you can see this demonstration that he gave. And, well, what's it, you know, you may ask yourself, what's the difference between Ishii shooting a bow and anyone else? Well, actually, it's quite a bit of difference, because Ishii pulled the string back with his thumb and released with his thumb, not his fingers. And that's called a Mongolian release. It's one of the great releases in the world in archery. But nobody did it over here. It was in Mongolia. And the Mongolians actually had a what they call a thumb ring that they wore on their thumb to help them, you know, hold the string, because they had these compound bows. Well, it just so happened that Ishii did, too, had a compound bow. Ishii would take a juniper bow, and it's got, you know, just a certain amount of pull to it in pounds. Then he would boil salmon skins, and then he would make a glue, and then he would take deer sinew and run it between his teeth. He had a gap in his teeth, and he would run it between his teeth back and forth until it became a flat ribbon. And then he would take that ribbon of deer sinew and paste it to the back of the bow with the glue made from salmon skin. And it increased the pull to about a 45 or 50 pound bow. And essentially, even though it's made of one piece of wood, that's still kind of a laminate, you know, to make it a more powerful bow. And so you see a lot of Mongolia in Ishii. And Ishii was, he never really directly answered any questions. His name was not Ishii. He never gave his real name. The only thing that he said that he was a Yahiyana. Yana is the name of a river in Siberia. So it makes you wonder, you know, where did Ishii get this Mongolian release when no one else in the entire country, no other Indian tribe, had a thumb release? And then why did he call himself Yahiyana, using a name that was exactly like the name of a river in Siberia? Well, it may have gone by, and Theodore Kroeber, who did a biography of Ishii, history of Ishii. The wife of Alfred Kroeber, who was his handler, anthropologist in the Phoebe Hearst Museum there in San Francisco, I think she wrote the book, Ishi in Two Worlds, I believe is the name of it. She talked about the Mongolian release for the boat. And she said it harkened back to a much earlier time when people came to this continent from ways that we don't fully understand, whether by the Bering Strait or they know now that in the ancient times, the coastline all the way around the Pacific was in kelp, the what they call kelp. It's a seaweed. And kelp prevented large waves from forming so that people could come by in much smaller boats and make their way around, not getting too far from the shoreline. So it's doable. So in lots of times, in a few little frames that did not chemically burn, this information is viewable. And we can not only see an Ishi, but we're seeing everyone that came before Ishi and the Yana tribe, the Yahiyana tribe, and what they taught him and what they learned. And it ends up in California. Ishi was the last of his tribe, as far as we know. His sister and an old man ran off when surveyors came up on their camp, and they left the mother there because she couldn't walk. And Ishi was out hunting. He comes back and finds his mother there, and they had taken his arrowhead making kit, and some of the arrowheads that he made are in the Phoebe Hearst, well, not the Phoebe Hearst, but University of California at Berkeley. I went to see the exhibit, and all of them were made from glass. That it was easier for him to pick up bottles that people threw away and make his arrowheads than it would be to try to make them from scratch from rocks or flint or obsidian. So they were all different colors. And I thought to myself, you know, here's a guy that has a Mongolian release that's ancient, but he's shooting arrowheads made of bottles that were made yesterday. You know, it was a juxtaposition and a strange combination of adaptability and tradition. And when they stole his arrowhead making kit, he almost starved to death. He got very emaciated, and they found him in a slaughterhouse in Oroville, California. This is at the foothills of Mount Lassen. And he was emaciated. His hair was short, almost to the scalp, where he burned his hair off in grief from the loss of his mother and sister and the old man. And he grieved until the time that he was taken to the University of California, and he became employed there, and then he let his hair grow out. But they just took a little cinder, a stick of wood with a burn end on it, and just melted the hair until it was short. And there were no other Indians to interpret that, but that was for his personal grief. Did you say something?
Well, yeah, we're out of time, okay? But,
okay.
Wow, what a story. Hey, thank you so much for being on our show each month. You know, we really appreciate hearing from you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. Glad to be here. And I'm really proud to work on Iconic Films. It's very gratifying.
Well, it's amazing, you know, the work that you do, and take care of yourself. I hope your health improves. And
we'll be right back.
We'll talk to you next month.
All right. Take care.
Thanks a lot.
Find some comfort at Willow's World, a variety of news, commentary, and poetry at Willow's Poetry Corner, where there are comfy cushions and a tempting selection of delectable comestibles. A show that's quirkily and quintessentially British, with a unique twist featuring Willow Andreasen, your host. Join Willow Mondays and Thursdays, 2 till 4 p.m. Eastern Time, Studio A.
We talk about decentralization and bank and annihilation. Bitcoin, Litecoin, Moneycoin, Yourcoin, Blockchain, baby. Mondays at 1600 hours Eastern, Studio A.
Do you or someone you know suffer from poor circulation, shortness of breath, or chest pains? Are you looking for a more natural solution to help overcome these problems? People tell us that after just a few months taking Extendivite, their doctors have noticed unexplainable improvements in their overall health. For more information, visit heartdrop.com or call 1-877-928-8822.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
And tell them Nighthawk sent you, because if you call this number and tell them Nighthawk sent you, you'll get $5 off your first order at extendivite.com. Thank you.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates.
You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
And now a message in a Boone's Farm bottle. Some notes we have received during the first hour of our show from listeners by email, chat room, telephone, telegraph, and telepathy. From Vladimir in Moscow, Idaho, we get this.
The tragedy of September 11, 2001. Hang on, I'm having a problem with my script again. Apologize for this, folks. Okay, here we go. The tragedy of September 11, 2001 goes far beyond the deaths of those who died in the towers and the deaths of firefighters. What's wrong with this thing? And first responders who succumbed to illnesses caused by inhalation of toxic dust. For 16 years, a new generation of Americans has been bored into the 9/11 myth that has been used to create the American warfare police state. The corrupt Bush and Obama and now Trump regimes used 9/11 to kill, maim, dispossess, and displace millions of Muslims in seven countries, none of whom had anything whatsoever to do with 9/11. A generation of Americans has been born into disdain and distrust of Muslims. A generation of Americans has been born into a police state in which privacy and constitutional protections no longer exist. A generation of Americans has been born into continuous warfare while needs of citizens go unmet. A generation of Americans has been born into a society in which truth is replaced with the endless repetition of falsehoods. according to the official story, on September 11, 2001, that vaunted national security state of the world's only superpower was defeated by a few young Saudi Arabians armed only with box cutters. Such a thing actually happened, there would have been demands from the White House, from Congress, and from the media for an investigation. Officials would have been held responsible for their failures. Heads would have rolled instead. The White House resisted for 1 year the 9/11 family's demands for an investigation. The worst security and failure in history resulted in not a single firing. No one was held responsible. Washington concluded that 9/11 was possible because America lacked a police state. The Patriot Act, which was awaiting the event, was quickly passed by the congressional idiots. The act established executive branch independence of law and constitution. The act and follow-up measures have institutionalized a police state in the land of the free. Osama bin Laden, a CIA asset dying of renal failure, was blamed, despite his explicit denial. For the next 10 years, Osama bin Laden was the bogeyman that provided the excuse for Washington to kill countless numbers of Muslims. Then suddenly on May 2, 2011, Obama claimed that U.S. Navy SEALs had killed bin Laden in Pakistan. Eyewitnesses on the scene contradicted the White House story. Osama bin Laden became the only human in history to survive renal failure for 10 years. There was no dialysis machine in what was said to be bin Laden's hideaway. The numerous obituaries of bin Laden's death in December 2001 went down the memory hole, and a SEAL team died a few weeks later in a mysterious helicopter crash in Afghanistan. The thousands of sailors on the aircraft carrier from which bin Laden was said to have been dumped into the Indian Ocean wrote home that no such burial took place. After 17 years, people at home and abroad find the government story less believable. 9/11 was used to fundamentally alter the nature of the U.S. government and its relationship to the American people. Unaccountable executive power has replaced due process, the checks and balances established by the U.S. Constitution, gone. In the name of national security, executive power knows no restraints. Essentially, Americans today have no rights if the government targets them. Those Americans born after 9/11 were born into a different country from the rest of us. The 9/11 lie has persisted for 18 years. Millions of Muslims have paid for this lie with their lives, the destruction of their families, and with their dislocation. Most Americans remain comfortable with the fact that their government has destroyed in whole or part seven countries based on a lie that Washington told to cover up an inside job that launched the crazed neoconservative drive for Washington's world empire. Well, it's been another long week in Moon Rock Lake, Ohio, my hometown at the end of the empire. Kate King is the daughter of Jack Robert King and Sherry King, and Johnny King was her brother. A while back, you might recall, you might not, Jack Robert King took his online podcast radio show on the road. He rode a bus from Nebraska to Oregon. He said he was looking for Bigfoot. But he wasn't just going to Oregon to see if he could have a Bigfoot experience. He also wanted to find out the truth about America. He just felt in his gut that he didn't know the whole story. And he had to know. Well, he found out at least something. At least more than he knew before. What we do know is that after he returned, well, a few weeks or months later, he and Cherry and John, you were dead. And the radio show was no more. Little Kate saw the whole thing. She saw it all. She ran. She ran into the corn that afternoon. And, well, she suffered. She survived and she learned. And today she is very, very angry. And very, very beautiful. And very, very capable. And so very alive. Recently, we saw how Kate was arrested while drawing on the curb during the presidential motorcade. Well, she wasn't arrested. They attempted to arrest her. She punched a policeman and the policewoman and got away into the crowd, into the night. That same night that she got into the fight with police after she escaped and then was on the 10 o'clock news, she went to the bookstore to meet the friends who were supposed to have met her at the presidential parade. And she escaped the bookstore, even with it being surrounded by police. She escaped into the night, into the flashing lights and bullets and bombs of America. She slept in an alley that night. And the next morning, she boarded a bus bound for anywhere, just to be going, to again, to be able to survive. And think, and just as soon as she could, to mount her own attack. On the bus with her, or so she imagined, were other Illuminati, ones who knew the truth about America. She saw one man who might have been a former FBI agent who knew the truth about the Wellstone, and also an astronaut who knew the truth and had spent the last decades riding buses to escape being murdered like the other astronauts who'd found out the truth. And there were others. And they rode the bus just like Kate, moving, always moving, plunging into the darkness of another new night, trying to survive the American nightmare. She fell asleep with her head bumping down the road on the glass. The sleeping Kate passed Gork and Bork and Tork as well as Nork, towns with windows lit by TV screens, where Torkians and Norksters listened and learned and smiled and chuckled and fell asleep at last with the faint sound of chuckles in the air. She passed prisons and penitentiaries and correctional facilities and jails and detention centers and lockups and holding tanks and barbed wire, razor wire, brick and stone and rock. The bus took a curve too sharply and banged Kate's head against the window. She pulled her legs up, wrapped her arms around herself to dream of cornfields and baseball and a large white front porch swing. Kate and the other dozing Illuminati passed by stone and brick homes with ponies and princes. They passed garbage-strewn streets with weeping naked babies covered with freezing snot. At the county court of Gork, a family of four kicked a young man in shabby clothes up the steps. They took turns kicking him. And across the street, on the giant flat-screen TV, the family was cheered on by a newscaster wearing a suit and then a team of cheerleaders. Followed by a family of five seen in their vehicle from the window of the drive-thru at Wendy's. The mother, father, sister, brother kicked the young man in the stomach, in the mouth, and the genitals. The man rolled under the ancient stone archway where high above the words of Abby Hoffman were etched in the marble. There's absolutely no greater high than challenging the power structure as a nobody, giving it your all, and winning. The man tried to rest, to resist for a moment there on his hands and knees under the pointed shoe pummeling. Blood dripped out of his mouth and nose and ears under the granite pathway. On the walk, a woman wearing a mink coat had a minister on a jeweled collar out for his exercise. At the curb, she tugged on the lead, and the minister plopped to his knees to cross the busy street. Three TVs droned in each home. Each door was locked and connected to a monitoring station with attendants watching computer screens and eating Doritos. Gorkian had a likewise secure bank account at the State Bank of Gork, with automatic monthly withdrawals going to the Church of Gork and the Volunteer Fire Department. The locks on the bank and the church were likewise similarly monitored. Each shotgun on each lap of each Gorker watching each TV aimed at a window through which a deviant with TVs on his mind might one night leap. While underneath the window, after dark, crept a banker and minister and fire chief. The TVs were mounted on stands adorned with lighted candles arrayed around. One set was tuned to SWAT, another cops, and the third always to America's Most Wanted. On the streets of Gork, police cars, plunder, then pillage, waited on each corner with lights flashing, sirens wailing. Gork school board divided the classes into penitentiary and preparatory. In the hospital nurseries, some newborns wore bracelets of blue and pink beads spelling out there something. The local blacksmith fitted the others with miniature handcuffs and shackles engraved with their register numbers, which would be replaced by larger accoutrements as they entered elementary and secondary school. To the moon, Alice! Kate leaned into the aisle to visit with the underground astronaut. Kate smiled wide. Excuse me one moment, folks. I'm having a little problem. Not all the words are showing on my script here.
That was Kennedy's proclamation, said the man. And 1 year later, John Glenn circling the globe. It's like a Stalin 5-year plan, and you always get big brownie points for getting done early. He munched chips from a bag and brushed thin hair from his brow. You declare it's going to happen, and by God, it happens, right? Kate looked at him. The moon is a giant spaceship, he said. Yeah, really, it is. Alien spies. They can see everything. The astronaut in Earth orbit pulled back into his chair cocoon, closed his eyes, and pulled in his arms and legs as a turtle to its shell for nap time. Kate turned back to her dark window and looked up at the full moon aglow, afire, eyes wide open, leering, peeking down at poor and rich alike. The moon looked down on a bus in the night in thousands of jails and prisons and penitentiaries in every county of every state in the United States of America. The wily spies on alien moon night duty gazed down through powerful scopes at the way the poor are kept that way and the way the rich keep themselves so well. They took midnight moon spaceship spy satellite night shift lunch break and then peered down upon the Illuminati, who knew what was what is done, riding night buses to safety. And there is always one more bus to board. They saw the tired residents of Gork on volunteer night patrol, clubbing the poor and dragging them behind the family SUV battleship destroyer out to the dump. The morning shift saw a young black man standing outside a trailer house with his father talking about the young man enlisting in the army to give him a future. The mid-morning alien spy team saw a young couple talking to a banker in a small town begging for the money to buy their first sad little home and begin their long, desperate lives. With one day of full ecstasy, they gazed with wide-eyed wonder down the top of a young woman waitress as she ripped off her apron and fired it to the floor, quitting the best job she ever had to go home to work in the factory with her mother, noting on special spongy writing tablets the anger she displayed and the spittle spewing from her mouth as she stormed away, leaving hot pancakes waiting on the counter.
Kate dreamed, thought, mooned over her family, her father, mother, brother, all dead. The little kitten, Biggie, with the oversized paws, the pitch black fur, the wet nose, snuggling her brother as they all sat on the porch watching the corn, the stars, and the moon. She turned her face against the window and washed it with her tears, remembering the day they were all killed, murdered by the man and woman in the black SUV, and how the helicopter rained bullets down upon her as she ran into the corn and slid under the old stalks to hide. She ran. She hid. They died. She lived. They bled and gasped for breath and drowned in their own blood as she crept away on her hands and knees. But she was only a child. Not yet 9. But she ran away. She left them, the ones who had fed her, dressed her, held her, ate ice cream with her on the sofa watching Tom Hanks movies. She let them die, and she lived. Her dad had told her to run, to go find Bigfoot, find the truth. But she didn't run to find Bigfoot. She ran because she was scared out of her mind. She screamed, ran into the ditch, fell on her face, scrambled under the barbed fence wire. She wet herself. She defecated in the new jeans her mother bought for her in Sioux City, and she was covered in dirt and had nibbled the corn and corn stalks in her hair. Even though the man and the woman in the SUV and the helicopter ran away too, and the state patrolmen in their flying saucer hats looked for her in the corn, well, they didn't find her because the crows that always hung out in the lane and the shelter belt dived at their heads, and they got tired of squatting at the birds while searching for just a little scared girl with dirty clothes and hair, with heart racing and tears streaming down her face, but who kept it all in while she heard their boots stomping in the corn. She swallowed her sobs and licked at her tears and burrowed like a wounded pheasant escaping the hunters. She did not let them find her, even though they called out, "Hey, Peggy King, where are you?" Because she had heard her father tell her many times on the porch that these were not the men you run to for help. Run away. That's the news from Moon Rock Lake, where all the police and soldiers are thugs, all the journalists and Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security, COINTELPRO, lone gunmen are about average. And that brings us almost to the end of another New American Dream radio show. We thank you so much for being with us tonight. We hope you will be back next week and every week right here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. And remember, it is listener-supported radio, so make sure you find that donation button at freedomslips.com or revolution.radio. Thank you, Mike, and good night.
Thank you, Chuck, for all you did to make the show happen. We all appreciate it. And thanks to our guests, M.K. Davis, Larry Pinkney, Anthony Rayson, Philip Ferruzio, and Frank Cordero. Please visit the New American Dream website for the archives, newdream.us, also Penn Magazine, P-E-N-N, magazine.us. If you'd like to donate to Frank Cordero and the Des Moines Catholic Worker, you write to Phil Berrigan House, 713 Indiana Avenue, Des Moines, Iowa, 50314. And for Richard Flamer and the Chiapas Project, you write the Chiapas Project in care of Holy Family Catholic Church, 1715 Izzard Street, I-Z-A-R-D, Omaha, 68102. And so good night to my friends, Chuck and Lorraine. Stay warm down there. Good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. Good night, Mark Bingham. Good night, Timothy McVeigh. Good night, Charlie Hebdo. Good night, Don Hochstrung. Good night, Ken Lay. Good night, Muhammad Atta. Good night, Omar Mateen. Good night, Noah Posner. Good night, Crystal Campbell. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
Well, did you hear? There's a natural order. Those most deserving will end up with the most. That the cream cannot help but always rise to the top. Well, I say, shit floats. If you thought things had changed, friend, you'd better think again. Bluntly put in the fewest of words. Cunts are still running the world. Now the working classes are obsolete. They're surplus to society's needs. So let them all kill each other and get it made overseas. That's the word, don't you know, from the guys running the show. Let's be perfectly clear, boys and girls. Cunts are still running the world. Cunts are still running the world. Oh, feed your children on crayfish and lobster tails. Find a school near the top of the league. In theory, I respect your right to exist. I'll kill you if you move in next to me. It stinks. It sucks. It's anthropologically unjust. But the takings are up by a third, so cunts are still running the world. The free market is perfectly natural. Do you think that I'm some kind of dummy? It's the ideal way to order the world. Fuck the morals. Does it make any money? And if you don't like it, then leave. Or use your right to protest on the street. Yeah, use your right, but don't imagine that it's heard. Cunts are still running the world. Cunts are still running the world. Good night, everyone. Thank you. Good night.
Of tyranny. You've come to fight as free men. And free men you are. What will you do without freedom? Will you fight?
We will run.
And we will live. Aye. Fight and you may die. Run and you'll live.
At least a while.
And dying in your beds many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom?
The future is uncertain, I know this. Death is inevitable, I know this. But one thing is certain, as free men, it is our right to live unencumbered and in peace. And those times are quickly drawing to an end. And in these times, peace is certainly an illusion. And as the chains grow tighter, our ability to slip those chains increase incrementally with every passing moment. Inaction is no longer an option. It's time to raise our voices. like a cacophony of thunder and lightning and tell the masters no more. And this is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, because the freedom is slipping away. Safe? Do you have the necessary information to assist you in confidently living through just about any survival situation? Is survival and gardening, off-grid living, medical knowledge, or even natural or man-made EMPs on your list of personal concerns? Do you have your documents and your personal information in a safe place in your hands where you know where it is? Well, check out our preloaded EMP-proof thumb drive.